And hello from Boise, Idaho, and Idaho Education News. This is Extra Credit, your weekly podcast looking at education politics and education policy. I am not Candidate A. I am Kevin Richard.
I'm Clark Corbin.
And we will get to the saga of Candidate A in the Napa School District here in a few minutes. It has been a busy week. It feels like election season is just around the corner. It's a year away, but it's certainly picked up for us this week.
It did pick up, Kevin, and I want to talk about the governor's race right off the bat. We had some news on Tuesday. The field got a lot more interesting, a very interesting way. Tell me about Representative Raul Labrador and his plans.
Well, we kind of knew this was coming. I mean, Congressman Labrador has been looking at this race for a long time. The rumor mill has been swirling for months, really years, that Congressman Labrador was eventually going to make a run for governor. And he filed the paperwork Tuesday morning. It was very quiet. It was very low-key. He just basically showed up and filed the paperwork. And the reason the paperwork is significant from a procedural standpoint is he named a campaign treasurer, Milford Terrell, a former member of the State Board of Education, a familiar name to many of our listeners. By naming a treasurer, Congressman Labrador basically lays the groundwork for running for governor. That's the mechanism that allows him to go out and raise money. And there's been a lot of money raised in this race already. So even though he's a member of Congress, he is coming into this from a bit of a disadvantage. He's got to play a little bit of catch up in terms of the money race. So by doing this and by filing this on Tuesday morning, he begins in earnest the road to a campaign for governor and a primary that's going to unfold here for the next year that is going to be something unlike what we've seen in gubernatorial politics in Idaho for a long, long time.
Let's get into that a little bit. There's already some campaign rivalries that were taking shape this week, but a little bit of a back and forth in terms of playing the media game between Lieutenant Governor Brad Little and Representative Labrador, right?
There was some quality shade being thrown by Lieutenant Governor Brad Little. And he did this in a variety of venues, basically taking Congressman Labrador to task for being out of the state for the past 6 years as a member of Congress. He did kind of a tongue-in-cheek visitor's guide to Idaho for Congressman Labrador. Also, in his statement on Tuesday, when Congressman Labrador announced when he filed for governor, basically, Lieutenant Governor Little put out a prepared statement and said, "I, like a lot of Idahoans, are waiting to see what Congressman Labrador has to say for his 6 years in Congress, what his accomplishments are." The battle lines are drawn. This is gonna be the talking point between the Lieutenant Governor and Congressman Labrador. And you got to remember, these are only two of the four Republican candidates in the field, but they are already kind of jousting at each other. It's going to be a long race, but it's going to be a fun race, too.
Sure, and Boise developer and physician Tommy Alquist also had a jab at Representative Labrador based on Congress's action on health care and the recent comments, the recent controversy that Labrador stirred up at a town hall.
Yes.
What did Tommy Alquist say?
On the subject of quality shade, Tommy Alquist went to Twitter over the weekend and took a pretty pointed jab at Congressman Labrador. The backstory, and everybody probably knows this by now, but Labrador spoke at a town hall meeting in Lewiston a week ago, a day after the House passed the repeal bill, the Affordable Care Act repeal bill, in which Labrador basically said that nobody dies because they lack health insurance. And there's been a firestorm of criticism about that comment. Labrador has been assailed over this comment on Twitter. Late night talk shows, Jimmy Kimmel took a shot at him. Closer to home and more germane to this gubernatorial race, Tommy Alquist went onto Twitter, linked to a story about the congressman's comments in the town hall meeting and said, "You know, gee, isn't it about time we have a governor, a physician in the governor's office?" So if this is any indication of where this race is going 12 months out, it's going to be a lot of fun. There's not going to be any shortage of sound bites here. And it all kind of goes to the timing of the congressman's filing. I think it surprised some people that he filed and put the initial paperwork out for governor on Tuesday in the wake of all of this criticism. I don't know. In some ways, it's almost in keeping with Labrador's character. He's kind of a politician who likes to fancy himself as somebody who's not afraid of a fight. He's not afraid of taking on the establishment. I think there maybe is a part of him that maybe decided, you know what, this is a good time to file. I'm going to double down. I'm going to show that I'm not backing down. I think in some ways it might actually solidify his base. And he's really got to get that conservative base.
Yeah.
Because if he's going to win, he's going to have to take a big chunk of that conservative base that former Senator Russ Fulcher got in the 2014 election, and Fulcher is back in the race here in 2018. You could easily see those two candidates carving up the far right constituency that's so important in that Republican primary. So I think Labrador maybe in a way was kind of calculated, that he sort of sent a message to his base that, you know, the heck with the criticism on Twitter, the heck with Jimmy Kimmel, I'm going to file and I'm going to do this on my terms, on my timetable. So, you know, everybody's saying that it's disastrous timing. I'm not sure it's disastrous timing. And a year from now, I don't think it's going to matter all that much.
Well, sure, and I'm glad you brought this up because, and we can have a little bit of fun with this, but on Tuesday, when I was looking at Twitter, there was a huge discrepancy between what the Idaho-based political reporters who I follow and work with were saying versus the national Washington-based reporters who were completely flummoxed and caught off guard
yes.
by Labrador's
it was funny
filing
to watch, yes.
that were basically like, what? But yet, you and I had been talking over the weekend before the filing, making plans for how we would cover it, assuming that it would
right.
happen
this eventuality
week.
Was something we knew was going to happen at some point, and we were hearing rumblings that it could happen this week. You know, no surprise. The only surprise, maybe, is the timing
sure.
of it in light of the criticism. But like I said, the more I think about it, the less surprised I am. And if this weren't enough political news, now that Congressman Labrador is leaving Congress, we got a race shaping up in the 1st Congressional District.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about, we saw one early filing on Thursday, and we've heard some rumors at this point, but real quick, now that the 1st Congressional seat appears to be opening up, what are you looking at, what are you hearing in terms of candidates or potential candidates?
Well, we know one for sure, David Leroy,
yep.
former Lieutenant Governor, former Attorney General. He filed his paperwork on Thursday. On Wednesday, former State Superintendent Tom Luna said he's seriously considering it. He's not going to make an announcement until after Congressman Labrador makes his formal announcement for governor. I think he is kind of biding time, perhaps, throwing his name out. It's kind of a trial balloon early in this race. You know, Luna is a very interesting wild card in this race. Elected twice statewide as state superintendent, but he hasn't appeared on a ballot since 2012 and the decisive defeat of the education propositions. You know, went down in flames in November of 2012. Luna did not seek re-election in 2014. We'll see what kind of brand he has, and really what kind of brand does he have in what I think is going to be a very crowded congressional race. You know, the last time we had this kind of a wide-open congressional primary in the first congressional district, we had six candidates. I think you could easily see a field about that large, maybe even a little larger. It's going to be very interesting to see who files, who doesn't file. And when you get into that kind of a race where you have a lot of candidates and a small voter turnout, anything can happen.
Yeah, exactly right. We are a year away from next year's contested primaries. You talked about how the governor's race has already heated up. We've got a year to go. Do you think we've seen all the filings for that race that we will see?
Oh, no. I think the only question is how many people file for CD. I kind of suspect, you know, I could be wrong here, but I suspect that now that you have Labrador and Brad Little and Russ Fulcher and Tommy Ahlquist in the governor's race, I don't think you'll see any more Republicans of note filing in that race. I think that the field is so carved up at this point. But, you know, it's politics. You know, we're here to be wrong when we talk about politics, right? So anything can happen.
All right, sounds good. Let's move on to more school district news. I want to head over kind of to our neck of the woods, Western Idaho. The Nampa School District has a new superintendent that they named earlier this week. Kevin, will you join me in congratulating Candidate A on receiving this important new job?
And now it can be told that Candidate A is indeed Paula Kellerer, a former dean at Northwest Nazarene University. She had been an assistant superintendent in the Napa School District. She was formally named the superintendent Wednesday night. The reason for this whole Candidate A thing, the school district had a series of interviews on Friday. They winnowed the field down to two finalists. Kellerer was one of those two finalists. The school board held an executive session to kind of talk about the candidates, came out of executive session, and voted unanimously that they were going to pursue hiring who they called Candidate A. They didn't want to name either of the two finalists until they had a contract offer agreed upon. So we reported Wednesday morning that Candidate A, whichever of the two finalists that was, had been selected by the school board, and we waited to get more details. And Wednesday night, the school district announced that indeed Paula Kellerer was the choice. She will be the next superintendent. And indeed, she was Candidate A. She was the candidate that the district wanted in the first place. They went into contract negotiations, moved fairly quickly, and the deal was done by Wednesday night.
But for 24 hours, I definitely want to point out that the patrons and the taxpayers, the public and the news media, had no idea who the Nampa School Board had voted to offer the superintendency to. And this was something that's important to Ed News. It's important to each of us when we talk about transparency and openness in government, doing the people's business out in public. And so Idaho Education News actually filed a complaint with the Canyon County Prosecutor's Office trying to find out if this was legal. Mm-hmm. That's why we did it. We're interested in transparency and not conducting government business in secrecy. And so we're trying to find out to determine if this process is legal, and it was new for me. Right. I had not seen it before.
And I guess it wasn't unprecedented. The school board said they were acting on the advice of the Idaho School Boards Association, which counsels school districts to do this in a situation like this where they're still trying to hammer out a contract with their choice for superintendent. So the school district contends that this is legal, and the executive director of the Idaho School Boards Association contends that it's legal and it's not unprecedented. It gets really murky when you start to talk about deliberations that go on in a closed executive session, which is allowed. They can deliberate on a hire in executive session, but they can't make the decision in executive session. They have to do that in open session in front of the public view. So it does get a little bit murky. That's why we decided that it was worth filing a complaint to get some clarification about whether this was legal or not. And I want to stress that when we file a complaint like this, you know, we're not criticizing the hire. We have no axe to grind or any reason to suspect anything about the hire. You know, from what the trustees have said about Paula Keller, what her resume suggests. I mean, yeah, this is not a criticism of the decision. It's a criticism or a question about whether the process was carried out properly, and that's why we filed a complaint to get some clarity. And we had to file a complaint to get that clarity. It's not enough to just ask, "Hey, was that okay?" You had to file a formal complaint to get some sort of a resolution, and that's what we did.
Absolutely. Interesting report, interesting process. It did take about 24 hours, but now the public does know who is going to go forward and lead the Nampa School District, one of the largest school districts in the state based on enrollment. I want to shift gears, go over to Eastern Idaho. We have a special guest in the office today. Our Eastern Idaho reporter, Devin Bodkin, is here. Fascinating story that he published Thursday about the Sugar Salem School District and an election that they have coming up. But let's introduce Devin real quick. And Devin, kind of tell us a little bit about where the idea for this story came from and what you found.
Well, yeah, thanks, Clark. Devin, it's good to be here. So this kind of started last year, really. I was covering some negotiations in the Sugar Salem School District out in Eastern Idaho, kind of by Rexburg. And this is something that Superintendent Alan Dunn had pointed out to me, that Sugar Salem had a hard time competing with some of the other school districts in the state because, according to him, their property values aren't up to what some of the other districts in the state have. And so it started there, and then we also did the People's Perspective, a public opinion poll conducted by Idaho Ed News and the Jay and Catherine Albertson Foundation, and basically we saw this is a big issue for people. Not only do people see that there's not necessarily an equal playing field in Idaho when it comes to local funding, but also that people want to see an equal playing field. And so I wanted to dive into that school district because I knew that on a per student basis, they had a pretty low property tax base, which these districts use to drum up local revenue.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and I thought that was an interesting aspect of the story. I thought there was a lot of sense of place in the story as I read it, a lot of sense of the history of how this district is in a situation where there just isn't a lot of property tax base per student. And you ran the numbers. You compared Sugar Salem to the West Bonner District and the Panhandle. And it's a significant gap that they're dealing with.
Yeah, no, you're right. Sugar Salem, it's interesting because they have this part of this humongous sugar factory that used to be out there. So at one point, it was really kind of an industrial hotbed in eastern Idaho. And now, as times have changed, it's much more agricultural. There's a lot more farming out there. So they just don't have that base that they used to have, which is kind of ironic. But yes, there are gaps, not only in what these districts can kind of drum up. And you talk about West Bonner School District. But I wanted to see what that translated to in terms of spending for kids. And when you look at what some of these districts, not all of them, but what some of them have the capacity to supplement their budgets with through these local dollars, the per student spending goes up in some of these districts. So when we talk about West Bonner, you have about $3,000 more that West Bonner School District can spend on each student compared to Sugar Salem.
And one of the areas that you looked into as far as Sugar Salem is concerned, and I know it's complicated, there were a lot of factors involved in this, the teacher salary issue and some of the teacher contract negotiations. Superintendent Dunn points to this funding issue as a complicating factor.
That's interesting because they do have the lowest per student property values in the state, but we also have some school districts in the state that don't have a supplemental levy on the books at all. And that might be because they can't pass one or because they choose not to.
Right.
But yeah, I think that he points to that. And when you look back at those negotiations, it's not necessarily that clear, though.
Right. It was a long process.
There was a miscalculation in the district of about $400,000 that helped fuel the deadlock in negotiations last year. And, you know, we had to point this out in the story. Last year, when these negotiations were happening, the school district approved raises for administrators while they were fighting the teacher salary raises. So I don't think it's necessarily all the supplemental levy issue.
And in some ways, I mean, Sugar Salem is not as bad off as some school districts around the state. Sugar Salem has been able to pass a supplemental levy, as you mentioned. They've been able to pass building bonds to put some money aside for capital projects. But they head into a pretty big election day on Tuesday. Can you walk us through what's on the ballot over there?
Yeah, so they have currently a $450,000, two-year, $450,000 levy on the books.
Per year.
Per year, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're scaling that back to $400,000. Superintendent Dunn pointed to some of the increased spending from the state, so they're scaling that back. But they also have...
So it'll be like $200,000 a year then.
Over 2 years, it'll be a $400,000 supplemental levy as opposed to a $450,000. But one of the places that he pointed to that he said it was kind of hard to drum up local revenue was in when it comes to school bonds, which are used for capital expenditures. The state has a cap on that, right? Is it 12%?
Right, and that was interesting. That doesn't affect a lot of school districts, but with the low property values in Sugar Salem, it does affect them.
Yeah, so this is one interesting place where when they bond, which they will have a $5.5 million bond on the ballots this election, you can't really build a new school for $5.5 million. So what they do is they will pass this one. It's a five-year bond. And then they hope to build part of a school, a new junior high. And then once that portion of the building's built, they hope to pass another one. So literally you have, in that school district, they want to replace their current junior high with a new junior high school over, according to Superintendent Dunn, it'll take 15 to 20 years to do that.
Wow.
Fascinating. Okay.
Well, good stuff. I think that kind of covers a little bit of what's going on in Sugar Salem. I urge readers to check that story out at idohednews.org. It's a it's a good look at what's going on in one school district, and it's symptomatic of a lot of funding issues that we deal with, a lot of funding equity issues that we find ourselves writing about quite a bit. Devin, thanks for coming aboard.
Thank you, guys. It's good to be here.
And it kind of sets the stage for where we're going to be next week. We're going to be looking at a lot of school elections, the Sugar Salem elections. Bonneville County has a proposition on the ballot about creating a community college. That's been a bitter issue in that part of the state for a long time. School funding issues in Valley View, Emmett, a variety of other districts around the state, some school trustee races that we'll be keeping an eye on. So check in with us on Wednesday for full coverage from the elections, the school elections, and more, because we'll be busy next week, I'm sure, with more politics and who knows what else.
Yeah, if we have any more filings in any of these other races we're tracking, we will tell you about all the newest candidates and all the newest developments in those races. Like you said, head over to Idaho Ed News on Wednesday morning, get your updated election results from across the state and all the rest of the news that we break throughout the week. If you want to keep up with Idaho education news closely, follow at Idaho Ed News on Twitter. We publish links to all of our stories and break news there. But in the meantime, I want to thank Devin Bodkin for joining us. He's done a heck of a job bringing us into eastern Idaho and covering, opening up a whole nother region of the state for our coverage, and we're really glad and excited that that's continuing. And I just want to thank everybody for listening to Extra Credit. We always have a lot of fun with this podcast. But I'm Clark Corbin.
I'm Kevin Richer. Have a good week. We'll be right back.